chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make to have in the middle of it. Rest make to have in the middle. We are rest make to have in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going this week. We've had two major Supreme Court decisions. One was gun rights that affected the right to carry in New York. And Hochul, we're going to hear from her in a little while and with a sit-down interview she had. But first, we're going to start off with Brett Baer and announcing just initially what his ideas were about this Supreme Court Roe versus Wade decision. And that's a hot topic now. That was rendered on Friday. And Friday night, there was all kinds of trouble in Arizona. And we'll report on that just a little bit later. But here we go with Brett Baer, what he had to say initially about that Supreme Court decision on Roe versus Wade callback.
Good morning. It's historic, no doubt about it. And politically, it's an earthquake. It really is. And just looking through the political lens, as we often do in Washington, does this have an effect, big effect, on the election coming up? You know, perhaps on some races around the edges, Democrats will try to rally the base on this issue alone. But I think the biggest message it sends is that elections have consequences. And the Supreme Court and putting those justices on the Supreme Court really changes the fabric of our country. Now, what was said already is important to remember, which is this is not outlawing abortion across the nation. This is not the end of abortion across the nation. In a state that rules or has laws that protect it, that's still available. But there are a number of states that had legislation ready to go for this very day. So it will have an impact around the country. It'll have an impact in politics. And I think it's fair to say it's an historic day.
Yeah, Brett, there's no doubt about that. The political implications will be weighed in time. There are other pressures on the American people right now that may decide these midterms, including the economy, inflation, gas prices, et cetera. All that will be sussed out in the months to come. Brett, stand by one moment. I'm going to get back to Andy McCarthy here. Andy, when you think about the composition of the courts and you think about the significance of this ruling and you go back some 10 years to Obamacare, many people thought a decision such as Dobbs would be held to the very end of the session. It wasn't. Does that suggest anything to you at all?
Well, no. I think they're dealing here, Bill, with competing tensions. On the one hand, the fact that this got leaked 7 weeks ago does create some pressure on the court to get the decision out the door so that it neither happens nor appears to happen that the outside pressure worked on the justices. At the same time, it does ratchet up security concerns about the justices and their families. So that's another factor that pushes them in the direction of getting it out when it was ready to go. I actually thought that it would be in the last batch, and I don't even know if today will be the last batch or not. 9 would be an awful lot for them to get through in one day. But I just think that, I thought the court handled this from top to bottom in a very professional way. I hoped that they would get the decision out quickly, but once they didn't, I think they were trying to show a stiff-spined determination that they were going to do their work. They were going to do the kind of caliber work, not only that the Supreme Court characteristically does, but that is demanded by this moment. And when it was ready to go, they let it go.
Yeah. One thing that will be very interesting, I think, Dana, is the opinion that's been released. How different is it from the opinion that was leaked back
on another May. On another network, and I'm just getting this from Twitter, so I won't. They suggest that the majority opinion is virtually identical to the one that was leaked. So we have that. Jonathan, can I ask you about security for the justices and their families? Because we've had you on air to talk about that. I know that you had talked to other judges as well and their concerns about it. We know that there have been ongoing protests outside of a few of the justices' homes over the last 50 days. There's never been an arrest of any of the protesters, even though it is against the law to do so, to protest in front of their homes. The Congress has just recently passed the bill in order to get them more security. Do you know anything about what planning there is right now to deal with the aftermath? As you can see, there's a ton of passion there on both sides, but the angry people from Jane's Revenge, it's in the name. It's in the name, Jonathan.
Well, when people are calling for a day of rage, you know reason will be a stranger. And that's what we're already seeing. People feel very passionately, but there's some that can take that to violent ends. So I expect they're going to be ramping up security. In terms of federal law, now that the opinion's out, it's actually more difficult to use the law because the law was designed to allow the arrest of people who are trying to influence a pending proceeding or matter with the court. This is no longer pending. So if anything, it's going to be less likely to arrest just for the act of protest. But I think that now law enforcement is going to really be acutely aware that there are people who are likely to lose reason, lose restraint, and could well become violent. And so I expect that they will ramp up that security.
Okay, Jonathan, stand by one moment. We did not know, Dana, how Chief Justice Roberts planned to vote based on the leaked memo. Well, we have his answer today. And you wonder about the composition of the court 10, 12 years ago when I mentioned Obamacare, how he sided with the liberal justices to keep that law intact. Today, he does not necessarily have the air cover of all those votes. And Justice Roberts, Andy McCarthy, I think you were talking about this the other day. Justice Roberts can now, he's free up to vote and pick a side in a way that he did not before. Just explain that to our audience as you see it.
Well, Bill, I think that, you know, when Chief Justice Roberts, not only in his first among equals role as the Chief Justice, but also when he was kind of the swing justice or one of the swing justices on a 5-4 court, he was in a better position not only to deflect cases that he would prefer the court not to take because they were too hot potato type, but also even within the framework of the cases that the court took, he was able to narrow the issues that the court would resolve. In a 6-3 split rather than a 5-4 split, he's got much less control. It takes only 4 votes for the court to accept a case, but obviously you don't take a case if you're a justice who wants to take it unless you think you can get the 5 to win. So now when there are 5 other conservative justices besides Justice Roberts, he's not in a position to sort of bargain his vote and use that as leverage to deflect cases that he'd rather not see the court take. They have much more freedom to take cases whether he wants to take them or not.
Wow, very interesting analysis there.
I just want to maybe ask Brett Baer quickly just to reflect on one thing. Think about Mitch McConnell's decision to not have a hearing for Merrick Garland, the Supreme Court nominee of Barack Obama that he wanted to put forward. I mean, that is, if you look back and you want to see a series of events that leads to today, that was a really interesting decision back then, and it's having a big impact today.
Yeah, I think you're right, Dana. That had a massive impact. The ability for President Trump to fill the seats that enable this vote to happen. And that's what I was talking about earlier about political consequences. You could do the opposite, and it hasn't adjusted the court. But when the Senate races in Georgia both flipped to Democrat in that runoff, that changed the dynamic as well. So what we see is implications of political moments. And the Merrick Garland situation, what McConnell did, he has it as a badge of courage and says it's one of the smartest things he thinks he ever did. Obviously, Democratic leaders think it's one of the worst. This is going to be fascinating to watch because there'll be another push to get rid of the filibuster. to try to get Democrats, while they have control, to have some piece of legislation that counters this ruling.
There, that gave you a little bit of background about Merrick Garland and so forth, that he was turned back and away from interviewing for the Supreme Court, you know, by the Senate. And so he, there's things that in the background here that are interesting to know. Anyway, coming up next is Tucker Carlson, and he had some very strong words to say about what's going on in America today. And he had Maxine Waters and what she said. She said, to hell with the Supreme Court. But here we go with Tucker Carlson.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. After nearly 50 years, the single shoddiest, most destructive Supreme Court decision in American history has finally been struck down. Roe v. Wade was overturned this morning by a 6-3 majority. Here's how Fox News reported it at 10:11 a.m.
The decision is out. It's been issued by Justice Alito, and Roe v. Wade, according to our reports from the U.S. Supreme Court and our own Shannon Bream, is that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, and the question of abortion has been returned to the states.
So pandemonium ensued immediately. In the headline of the Babylon Bee, Democrats paused January 6th hearing to call for insurrection, and that's basically true. But from a legal perspective, which is what matters, there's nothing surprising about today's decision. It was only a matter of time before Roe v. Wade was overturned. That's been obvious for decades. Even Democrats once acknowledged it. Roe was one of those decisions you never heard anyone defend on its own terms. Lots of people want legal abortion, but no one's ever explained how exactly the Constitution guarantees that. Roe was a political document. It was not a legal opinion. And for that reason, its existence degraded and undermined the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, one of our country's central institutions. It was poison. Now, the purpose of the Supreme Court is simple. It's to determine whether the laws that politicians pass are consistent with the United States Constitution. That's it. That's all the Supreme Court does. What the Supreme Court does not do, what it cannot do and should never do, is make laws. And it should never do that, because a court making laws would be, by definition, anti-democratic. None of the 9 Supreme Court justices has been elected by anyone. All of them have lifetime appointments. If you cared about democracy and wanted democracy to continue, you would demand that all laws in the United States be passed by elected legislatures. Again, no matter how you feel about abortion or any other specific issue. In a democracy, voters have the final word on how they are governed. That's what democracy is. Now, after nearly half a century, voters have had their rights restored on the question of abortion. If they like abortion, they can vote to legalize abortion. If they don't like abortion, they can vote to ban abortion. That's not shocking. That is how our system is supposed to work, not being a monarchy and all. So what's the argument against this? Well, there isn't one, really. And we know that for certain from the dissent in today's Supreme Court ruling. The 3 justices who objected don't even bother to make a legal argument in favor of keeping Roe v. Wade. Instead, they threw an embarrassing little tantrum. At one point, Kagan, Breyer, and Sotomayor warn that the highly diabolical Clarence Thomas actually plans to ban interracial marriage. Clarence Thomas against interracial marriage. And then, of course, there's lots of huffing about something called bodily autonomy, which actually we're strongly in favor of, though it's not clear how that applies to abortion, which affects 2 bodies. But in any case, these same bodily autonomy people are the very same justices who just voted to uphold mandatory vaccinations for millions of Americans, thus violating their bodily autonomy. So much for that argument. Not that it stopped Justin Trudeau of Canada, where abortions are legal till the moment of birth. Today, Trudeau wrote this, quote, "The news coming out of the United States is horrific. No government, politician, or man should tell a woman what she can or cannot do with her body." Suddenly, women are the only ones who get pregnant, you'll notice. Canada is a country, by the way, under the leadership of Justin Trudeau, that prevented unvaccinated citizens from traveling within their own country. They had mandatory vaccinations. Justin Trudeau was perfectly happy to tell the women of Canada what to put in their own body. So you're beginning to see why precisely 0 people throwing tantrums today have bothered to explain the law or the principles that supposedly underlie Roe v. Wade. Not one of them. Instead, they're yelling, as they always do, suspending the January 6th hearings to start an insurrection. And that would, of course, include Joe Biden. Here he is.
It was three justices named by one president, Donald Trump, who are the core of today's decision to upend the scales of justice and eliminate a fundamental right for women in this country. Make no mistake, this decision is a culmination of a deliberate effort over decades to upset the balance of our law. It's a realization of an extreme ideology and a tragic error by the Supreme Court, in my view.
Notice that it's abortion that is the red line for them. Abortion, of all the issues, why is that so important to them? It's obvious why it's so important to America's corporations, almost all of whom immediately weighed in to say, we'll fly you to get an abortion at the state of your choice. Why? Well, of course. Employees without families are loyal to the company. And, of course, it's much cheaper to pay for an abortion than it is to pay for maternity leave or an extra name on the insurance policy. So it's all about the money for corporate America. It always is. Families are bad for big corporations. Therefore, they're against families. But what's the president talking about exactly? What's this extreme ideology? Pro-baby? That's extreme ideology that, quote, upsets the balance of our law. What is Joe Biden talking about? This particular ruling dramatically reduces the power of unelected judges to dictate the details of the lives of millions of Americans and returns that power to voters. Voters get to decide how they want to live. That's an extreme ideology that upsets the balance of power somehow? We thought that was the whole premise of our system. We thought that was democracy. And yet the very people who've been lecturing us for years about democracy, it's the end of democracy, are horrified by the return of democracy. They're telling us the legitimacy of our institutions is at risk. And yet they cannot allow voters to have a say in how they live. What does that tell you? It tells you they care about power, not popular support. They're afraid to put their ideas to the test of a vote. And that's why the Justice Department, which no longer dispenses justice, instead it works on behalf of the Democratic Party, allowed thugs to gather outside the homes of Supreme Court justices for the last several weeks in violation of federal law in an effort to intimidate them into not doing what they did today. And that's why today you saw several elected members of Congress call for insurrection. That would include Sandy Cortez of Westchester. It would include, as always, Maxine Waters of Los Angeles. This is not the first riot she's called for. She once again threatened violence against Supreme Court justices because they came down with an opinion she doesn't agree with. And then she promised to defy the court's ruling. How's this for defending our institutions? Watch.
You see this turnout here? You ain't seen nothing yet. Women are going to control their bodies no matter how they try and stop us. The hell with the Supreme Court. We will defy them. Women will be in control of their bodies. And if they think black women are intimidated or afraid, they got another thought coming.
To hell with the Supreme Court. Roberta Mugabe there. We'll defy them. Really? You will defy our core institution after sending people to prison for questioning the last election. Is that what you're saying? Don't lecture us ever again about the sanctity of our institutions, about our norms, because you clearly don't care about them at all. What you care about is power.
There you go. Maxine Waters is defying everybody, causing a lot of words are very powerful, and she's going to set off some problems with what she said. There's no doubt about it. She did things like this before and called people to confront people in restaurants and so forth. But she's very, 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 very disruptive, and she injects into the conversation some very, very outrageous and unproductive and very, very dark things. Well, I'm going to let what Steve Forbes said about the economy, just a short clip, and then we're going to get back to gun rights in New York. Here we go with what Steve Forbes said about the economy.
House officials insist the recession is not inevitable. But take a look at this. New Google Trends data shows more Americans are Googling the word recession than at any time since 2004. Well, Steve Forbes joins me now. Good morning to you, Steve. Okay, clearly people are worried about a recession. Good morning. Do you think those fears are warranted, or is the White House right in saying that a recession is not inevitable?
Well, I think the White House almost sounds like sometimes they're secretly working for the Republicans. Every time they say things are better than you think, happy times are here again, and things like that. So, yes, people, the economists may define recession as two down quarters in a row, but tens of millions of households feel they're already falling behind as wages are not keeping up with inflation every time they go shopping or buy at the pump. So, yes, the recession worries are very, very real. And unfortunately, the Federal Reserve, even though they aren't explicit about it, they think you curb inflation by making people poorer, by slowing the economy down. So, yes, we're in for rough times. Whatever name you want to give to it, the economy is going down.
What is a more effective way to fight inflation then, Steve? What would you do?
Well, one, you would have a stable dollar. That's the key thing. And have let the market set interest rates and stop trying to manipulate the economy. So if you have a stable currency over time, that'll cure a lot of woes. And which this administration will never do, but maybe in a couple of years we'll get one that will, and that is reducing taxes and regulations. Regulations went up over $200 billion last year from this administration, and they're back at it again this year. So you have a stable currency, lower taxes. Guess what? That means more supply. That means more demand, higher wages. That means life can be good again.
Very quickly, Steve, Treasury Secretary Yellen, talking about these high gas prices that are hurting everybody, says, you know, the way to fix this energy crisis is to move to renewables. Your thoughts?
Well, yes, go on Google and conjure up 100,000 windmills that we can put on airplanes and cars, and then all would be well. They could deliver it in 24 hours. No, it's absolutely preposterous, and the American people know it. So if the Federal Reserve really started to sell all those excess bonds they bought, and the federal government removed obstacles to making energy here at home instead of begging the Saudis and others for it, you would see a very changed economy.
All right, we'll leave it there. Steve Forbes, as always, sensible stuff. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Keep using that word, Steve.
Thank you, Ash.
Sensible information. Thank you, Steve.
Okay, we're going to get into a discussion that was created by Fox, and there's four or five people in there, and they're some of the top legal minds about gun rights and about this New York law that was struck down about regulating the gun carry and so forth in New York City. But anyway, we're going to play this Fox interview. It's actually a panel discussion that's very insightful. Then Harkle, we're going to get her, Governor Kathy Hochul. We're going to have what she said on a sit down with on another panel discussion, and she's going to try to regulate the hell out of this thing still. So I mean, she's resisting. It sounds like the validity of this law. So here we go with this Fox discussion.
Okay, so we do have one decision handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court. It deals with guns in America. It's a 6-3 ruling, but we have not seen the opinion yet, Dana. At issue here was New York State Rifle and Pistol versus Bruin. It's the biggest gun control case the court has had in 14 years. At issue, two gun owners in New York had their applications denied based on a failure to show what is considered a proper cause. Mm-hmm. In states like New York, to carry a concealed weapon outside of the home, you need special permission to do that. And these men were arguing that's a violation of Second Amendment rights. So the court holds, here we go now, the court holds that New York's proper cause requirement to obtain a concealed carry license violates the Constitution by preventing law-abiding citizens with ordinary self-defense needs from exercising their Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms in public for self-defense. That's the ruling 6-3. It'll affect states like New York and about seven others that had similar restrictive rules.
This is a significant, big case. I know we have Jonathan Turley, and I believe we have Shannon Bream with us. So we'll get them here in just a moment. Just let me set up one thing, and then we also have Andy McCarthy. This is really good. So at 6-3, and one of the things that happened in this case, and Jonathan, maybe I'll go to you first if you're able, is that the gun rights activists, once they started down this road, they might have realized at some point, as I remember reading, that they might have actually hurt their cause here, because this now, this decision, for the gun rights people, it kind of backfired. For people who were wanting people to have more self-defense rights, it seems that they have won in this Supreme Court case.
They have won, and it is an interesting point that you make. New York has been the gift that keeps on giving for gun rights advocates. They, like D.C. and Chicago, have lost major cases before the Supreme Court. This was a case that many of us wrote on when it was in the lower courts. I thought that it would result as it did today, that this was a case that clearly was unconstitutional under the controlling authority of Heller. And what you have in jurisdictions like New York is a very strong gun control effort, but they often produce cases that, quite frankly, are welcomed by many gun mm-hmm. rights advocates, because you can create, in their view, this was a bad case to make some good law, and they did so. This is a 6-3 wow. decision. You have Justice Thomas looking at the history of the Second Amendment, looking at the holding in Heller, and saying that the answer is clear, that you cannot impose this burden on gun owners to be able to carry a concealed weapon.
Jonathan, stand by here. I know you and Andy McCarthy and Shannon Bream are reading through this, through the opinion right now. Shannon, I want to go to you, but just to put a headline here, in a major ruling for gun rights, the Supreme Court has cited with these two gun owners in New York, saying that they're striking down, rather, the restrictive gun law in New York State. Shannon, to you, what do you read?
Yeah, what had happened is these two gun owners were looking for the opportunity to carry a concealed weapon. They had other licenses and other things that allowed them to carry their guns for specific reasons. But they said, I just want to be able to carry one. I think that that's my constitutional right. But in New York, you had to have a special showing. You had to have a reason to say that you had a justification for carrying a gun in a concealed way. Well, they said there shouldn't be those restrictions. If I'm a law-abiding citizen, I should be able to carry. So in striking down that New York law and essentially sending this case back down, here is what Justice Thomas, writing for the majority 6-3, says. He says the constitutional right to bear arms in public for self-defense is, quote, not a second-class right subject to an entirely different body of rules than the other Bill of Rights guarantees. And he's used this language before, talking about the fact that he thought that the Second Amendment was in some cases being treated as a second-class right. He goes on to say, we know of no other constitutional right that an individual may exercise only, excuse me, my computer here, only after demonstrating to government officials some special need. That is not how the First Amendment works when it comes to unpopular speech or the free exercise of religion. It is not how the Sixth Amendment works when it comes to a defendant's right to confront the witnesses against him. And it is not how the Second Amendment works when it comes to public carry for self-defense. So he says New York's proper cause requirement, or that this special showing that you have to carry a gun, violates the 14th Amendment in that it prevents law-abiding citizens with ordinary self-defense needs from exercising their rights to keep and bear arms. The dissent is written by Justice Breyer. Of course, he is just days away from retirement. He's joined by Justices Kagan and Sotomayor. I haven't read his dissent yet. It's about 135 pages long, but we're getting there. That's the headline ruling, Bill, a big win for gun rights.
Just picking one line out here, Shannon, from Justice Thomas. The government will have to show, he says, that a gun regulation is, quote, consistent with this nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation, which goes right to the Second Amendment. To Andy McCarthy now, and your reaction, Andy.
Well, I think this is a faithful rendition of what the Second Amendment is, which is really the most misunderstood amendment in our public discourse, I think, Bill. The Second Amendment is not a right to bear arms so much as it is an acknowledgement that there is a pre-existing right to bear arms that existed and was derived from natural rights at the time the Constitution was ratified. So it's not a positive grant of a right. It's an acknowledgement of a right that already existed, and it's a prohibition on government
from regulating that right. So if you're within the ambit of the right to keep and bear arms, as it was understood, the idea is not the government's doing you a favor and allowing you to defend yourself. The point of the right is to limit the ability of government to disarm the public in terms of that ambit of what the Second Amendment protects. So, you know, our discourse seems to presume that government has a right to regulate as long as it's reasonable. And what the Constitution says is, no, you have a right to defend yourself, and the Second Amendment is a limitation on the government, not a limitation on you.
Interestingly, in looking at this, Jonathan, I wanted maybe a little bit of a two-part question here, which is, this is seismic for a lot of reasons, especially because it's not just New York. These are the other states where it would have an effect. California, Delaware, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. And when you have a case like this that has such a seismic impact, how long does it take for a state, those other states or even New York, to change its rules? As of today, does it change?
Oh, those are presumptively unconstitutional. And they should be changed, but the question is, they really can't be enforced to the degree that they contradict this decision. This is a momentous decision for gun rights advocates and for the Second Amendment. It has all of the elements that you often associate with a Thomas opinion. He brings up sort of originalist history, swatting back arguments from later and after the ratification as largely irrelevant to understanding the intent behind the Second Amendment. But most importantly, the court rejects a two-part test for looking at limitations on gun rights and stresses you need to presume that people have a right to exercise individual rights, like gun possession. And that means that you can't put the sort of thumb on the scale, as New York did here, and say, show us that you have proper cause, including moral standing, to have a gun. And what the court really hammers at is that this would not be tolerated with other rights in the Bill of Rights. And there is a tendency among some judges and many legal analysts to treat the Second Amendment as something less than an individual right. And what Justice Thomas is saying here is that this is an individual right with the other rights in the Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. And we don't like shifting the burden to people to say, prove you need to use this right.
Back to Shannon and Andy on this. I mentioned this first case regarding guns of significance before the court in 14 years. And Shannon, in 2008, they ruled that the Second Amendment guaranteed individuals the right to have a gun at home for self-defense. And now this ruling essentially addresses whether the individual can carry the gun outside the home. And Shannon, after living in New York for the past 20 years, I can tell you, for those whether they support or against the Second Amendment, living in New York, if you wanted to get a gun, it wasn't impossible, but it was pretty close to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's been the issue that these two gun owners who decided to push forward with this case said, you know, there are those who are, whether they're lawmakers or celebrities or sports stars, whatever they are, those folks are usually either have their own security or they're able to get this particular concealed carry license that they need so they can protect themselves. And part of the argument was, why should everyday American citizens not have the same right to protect themselves if this is about self-defense and wanting to conceal carry? New York did permit other licensing that would allow you to transport guns for hunting and gun clubs and those kinds of things. But when these two, and I believe one of them is actually a gun instructor, came forward and said, listen, we are responsible, law-abiding people who know how to handle guns safely. We have great respect for them. Why should we then be disadvantaged in that we can't carry a gun for our own protection? So that was definitely a big part of the argument. In looking at the dissent, it goes exactly where you think it would. It begins with statistics about shootings and deaths by gun in America and where that takes us. But that seems to be the majority wholly apart from where they're going in the majority opinion. As I said, Justice Thomas has said in the past that he thought that the Second Amendment was being treated as a second-class right. And for a long time, the court has not taken a gun case, and there has been a lot of pressure. A number of gun cases have bubbled up. And even in not taking the cases, Justice Thomas and others have said, the fact that we won't even address these, we're not treating this right like we do other constitutional rights, and it's time for us to take one of these cases and make one of these decisions. So here we are, 6-3, a very big decision, and it comes at a time when this country is really grappling with the debate, with horrific, incidents in Buffalo, in Uvalde, and now a gun bill that is sitting there in the Senate and could get a vote today.
I was just thinking about that vote today, that could happen at any moment. In fact, Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, does plan to call it up, and there would be about 30 hours of debate. It could actually be voted on finally tomorrow. Andy, one thing I've noted here is that in the dissent, Justice Breyer refers to Uvalde and Buffalo, and apparently, I know you haven't had a chance to read 135 pages in the last 3 minutes, but Justice Alito has a retort regarding Buffalo, because, and I'm assuming what that has to do with is the responsible gun owners who can legally carry a firearm. That's what this case, this specific Supreme Court case, is about.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think considering that part of the dissent and picking up from what Shannon just said about, you know, statistics and bringing the fact pattern up to the modern day, I'm reminded of what Justice Scalia said in Heller, which is that, you know, look, we have this Second Amendment, which protects a pre-existing right to have self-defense in the form of firearms that were in that are in common use. Now, we could amend the Second Amendment. We could change it so that, it would allow firearms that are even beyond what's in common use. Or we could amend it and take it out of the Constitution. But the court's obligation is to give effect to what the Second Amendment says as it was originally understood when it was adopted. So all this stuff about, you know, modern circumstances and statistics and what I think the court is saying is, fine, amend the Constitution
right.
if you're not happy with the Second Amendment.
Right.
But our job is to give effect to what the Second Amendment says as it was understood when it was adopted.
Okay, thanks to all three of you for the quick reaction there. Just reading one more thing here, Dana, I think it's relevant, from Justice Thomas's decision. Nothing in the Second Amendment distinguishes between home and public with respect to the right to keep and bear arms, which was the question that was before the court. Interesting, Chief Justice Roberts voted with the majority at 6-3, and also apparently it's Justice Thomas's birthday today.
Here's what Hochul, Governor Kathy Hochul, had to say at a panel discussion about what she's going to do. And she says there are sensitive areas, but she can't define that. It's almost every area that she starts listing. I ask her towards the end, how would you define a sensitive area that the state has a right to regulate inside of? And she was naming almost everything. And one of the things that would be important is if people start carrying guns on subways, that will cut off violence on the subways. I'll guarantee you that. And if people start carrying widely in New York City, it will reduce crime. The more guns, the less crime. So here we go with Hochul, and it's totally out of touch with reality.
More now on the Supreme Court's major decision on gun access in this country, overturning New York State's handgun licensing law and ruling that it violates the Second Amendment, infringes on people's rights in this country. It's a decision that comes with particular timing following a mass shooting that killed 10 people in Buffalo last month and a deadly subway shooting in New York City. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has sharply criticized the ruling and says that the state of New York will respond. And she joins us now. Governor Hochul, thank you very much for being here.
Warren, thank you for inviting me.
There are people who are cheering this ruling, and I want to get your response to them, but also your response to the ruling itself. What do you think New York State can do to rein in guns after the Supreme Court has said, actually, the Second Amendment extends outside the home?
We believe that the decision was shocking in its scale and also reprehensible, given that we are experiencing a nationwide gun violence crisis. So to strip away the ability of a state like New York that's had a law on the books for over 100 years, this is not a recently enacted change in how we manage our licensing. We've always done this. The only thing that has changed is the political composition of the Supreme Court. That being said, we're prepared to take action. We have legislation being drafted. We plan to go to a special session next week. But to those who are cheering this, say, we never were taking away your right to possess a gun. But we have a right to restrict who has it and where they use this gun.
Everybody in America recognizes that there's a problem with gun violence. Mm-hmm. And the people who cheer this, what they say, what they see is, look, there is a problem with gun violence. And I, as a law-abiding citizen, want to be able to hold a gun on my person so that I feel safer. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that individual?
I say that makes everyone else feel very unsafe. We don't know if you're provoked. You know, you're in a bar and you're having someone looks at your girlfriend or your boyfriend the wrong way. There are so many triggers. It is, if someone wants to have a legal gun license protection in their home, that is their domain, they can do that. We've always allowed that. Or for hunting and other purposes. But to think that someone would be able to do this on a subway in a crowded, you know, tense situation during rush hour, no. No, we have a right to protect our citizens. Not take away your right to own, that's fine, but where you take it and the ability to conceal it, that's just going to make things so much more complicated for law enforcement and others.
Yeah, but back to Tony's point, the people that are chairing this are saying, it's not the guns that are a problem, it's the criminals that are using the guns that are the problem.
And here's what happens. You have 25% of gun violence cases, you know, shootings, are with stolen guns.
Yes.
They are stolen from legal gun owners who didn't properly lock them up or manage them. So we have to tighten up our laws. We will respond. We have a strategy. We've been involving legal experts from all over the country to make sure that we do the next steps to let New Yorkers know we're going to protect them.
I heard something interesting in the decision yesterday that it should not impact the restrictions of carrying firearms in sensitive places. What is a sensitive place in the state of New York? Is a subway a sensitive place?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And we are going to define sensitive places in the legislation we're drafting.
What's your definition of it, Governor?
It's hard to find a place that's not sensitive, in my judgment. You know, we know what we have to do, but places where there's gatherings of people, like it could be a sporting event. You know, Rangers games get a little rough and tumble. Mm-hmm.
Seems like no place is safe now.
Well, think about this. Subways, churches, places, you know, synagogues, mosques, you know, places, religious gatherings, places where there's children, daycare centers.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of vulnerable places. And also, the right of a private property owner, a business owner,
right,
owns a bar. He may not want someone, or she may not want someone to walk in with a concealed carry. So we're going to look at their rights to protect their establishment as well. And that's what our laws
are. Will this make this harder for police to do their jobs, do you think?
I believe it will, Gail.
Why?
It's going to complicate things. When a police officer who's trained to identify and notice if there's, you know, some evidence of a bulge on a pocket or something, you know, they're trained. How will they know whether this is someone who's has an illegal gun about to go commit a crime versus someone who may have the concealed carry license. So it's complicating things. And they already have a tough job to do. We're trying to protect people in our streets. And what we had in place for 100 years in this state worked. Didn't strip away rights, protect our citizens. I'm the governor. My job is to protect the people of this state. And they've complicated this tremendously. And we're standing up.
Let's change gears for a little bit. We're also waiting for another major Supreme Court decision, which is the possibility of the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Now, you signed a package of bills earlier this month, which basically provides protection for people seeking abortions. What are those legal protections?
We're protecting our abortion providers from lawsuits brought by someone in another state. A place like Texas, for example, they give people a private right of action so they, someone else who's not even affected can sue an abortion provider. I want to make sure that our providers in New York are protected. We passed that law. Also, to make sure that our providers have the resources they need, because there will be a mass migration of women in search of reproductive freedom from other states coming to New York. So we had to beef up with $35 million to give them the resources they need. But you think about the inconsistency of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
They're saying that we'll leave it up to states to restrict a woman's right to choose.
Right.
But you won't leave it up to me to protect my citizens. with gun safety laws. So states' rights, I'm not sure what they're thinking. All I know is this seems like a very political agenda.
You got a lot on your plate, Governor.
We sure do, but we're up for it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, there you go about the two major things, but also I must make some comments about the January 6th committee. They've got all kinds of video and so forth and so on that they're just continuing to pile on out there. It's all one-sided. There's no the two Republicans on the committee are rhino types anyway. So there's no fairness on this January 6th. Anyway, I think the public is waking up to the impartiality of it. It's not impartial. It's very, very one-sided. But anyway, coming up next is Alex with Leo Zagame. Zagame is a Vatican insider, you know, and he knows what's going on in the Vatican. He says this Lithuanian thing with Russia, that Lithuania's cut off that rail line into the heart of Russia from Lithuania, is going to be a major problem. And the Russians have already stated that this is going to be a big, big problem. So Leo Zagame is also saying things about the Pope, that he's in a wheelchair now, he's going to resign and then designate someone, and they're going to go to some kind of committee to run the Vatican instead of one Pope, maybe. But I've got to come into thesecrettruth.com, and I've got a friar that has some very, very good insight about what's going on in the Vatican, and I'm going to give you some click-offs on that also. So come into thesecrettruth.com, scroll down to this today's program, 6/25/22, and there'll be something about extended insights into the Vatican and the Pope. And also, we'll have some click-offs on other topics, too. So here we go with what they had to say about the Vatican and Lithuania and Russia.
First of all, as you know, this crisis will create a massive migration from Africa, for example, because of the grains and flours that are no longer coming from Ukraine. And for that reason, of course, the papacy will be centered, it will be focused on Africa with an African pope. That's it's almost like they are preparing this whole thing. And at the same time, we have, of course, the escalation in the last couple of days regarding Kaliningrad. Kaliningrad is a small enclave that used to be under the control long time ago of the Teutonic Knights, is on the Baltic Sea. It's Russia, but it's surrounded by NATO countries, by Lithuania, by Poland, and now they have stopped the import of goods from Russia by train. That is basically a violation for Russia of all treaties, and it also forces Russia to intervene. Now, the spokesperson for the Foreign Ministry of Russia has just said that they will intervene basically militarily. That is of an enormous gravity, and I don't really know why most of the media today in America are not talking about it, because we are literally facing now an even worse scenario than Ukraine, because Ukraine is not NATO. Instead, Lithuania is NATO, so that will be automatically America intervening in this war, and the consequences, of course, will be disastrous.
All right, I've known Leo Zagame for a long time, been on my show more than 10 years, but I got to tell you, he's written best-selling books, he's covered it all, he gave us a tour of the Vatican, and so much more years ago when I was in Rome, Italy. And he predicted, he said, listen, they want to get rid of Pope staying in their office until they die. They want to start replacing him. Then they're going to have a committee after that. And all of it's happened. He predicted the current Pope, who was the head of the Jesuits, would be the Pope 5 years before he was. He predicted that he would step down. Now it's all in the news. He's getting ready to step down. What is that really about? Because even if you're not a Catholic, there's over 1 billion people on this planet that are. And we've seen this current pope do the opposite of somebody like John Paul II and, you know, so many others that have been out there. And it's just a crazy time to be alive. So what does all this really mean? What does this signify? And what does it mean with the current Pope a month ago saying NATO started the war, they should do a deal, this war should stop? What does that signify? I got almost no news coverage. There's a lot of pieces to this. Looking at the Great Reset, the New World Order, all these plans. Leo Zagami joins us for the balance of the hour. I appreciate him. LeoZagami.com, LeoZagami.com, or at Real Leo Zagami on Gab. And he is here with us to lay this out. True Vatican, former Illuminati, whistleblower, insider. What a time to be alive, Leo. How you knew all this so many years. I knew you were 20 years ago, and I was like, I don't know if that's true or not. Then it all came true. That's why I've had you on. What a time to be alive. There's so many angles to cover here.
Absolutely, Alex. It was a pleasure to speak to you and to your audience. We are definitely facing a turning point in history. The Pope itself, like we said when I was with you in Rome, will become a figure that will start to become very far from his divine appointment. He's kind of like giving up on hope of staying there until the end of his mandate. It's pretty clear now that even Megyn Kelly, I mean, I'm not talking about a big Vatican expert, and you, of course, know her too. So she came out while in Rome stating that there is something that is going on in the Vatican right now. And I can definitely confirm that they are preparing for the Pope to resign, but not before he appoints the last progressive cardinals that will define the next papacy. It's a little bit like the Supreme Court here in the U.S. If you have it filled with progressive members, it will act in a way. If you have it with Republicans, in another way. So he is being actually staying in his position only because Ratzinger is still there. And Ratzinger behind the scenes could still be a threat. That's why during the pandemic he's been increasingly isolating the now former Pope. And in the meantime, he got sick. He got sick with a colon cancer that got pretty bad last year. The Vatican has done everything possible to cover up the situation, which now sees really the Pope in a wheelchair. So it's pretty evident. He had to also cancel a trip to Africa that he was planning for a long time, which was also a way for him to introduce the next pontificate, which will be definitely in the hands of an African pope. So this is what's going on in the Vatican. He's waiting August to nominate these other cardinals that he will need so he can basically program the next papacy in line with his own, and then he's going to resign. So there is not much left to this papacy that will probably end up in August, maximum in September. I know that we've been saying this before, that he will resign, but he has been resisting because he, of course, wanted to wait for the death of Ratzinger. But Ratzinger is still there, so that's about it. He's resisting until on August 27th he will be nominating 21 new cardinals, of which 16 will be progressive-leaning cardinals under the age of 80 that will be eligible to vote in a future conclave. And that's about it, Alex.
What do you make of him coming out, as you know, a month ago and saying, okay, NATO started the war, we need a peace deal with Russia. They got almost no coverage, but he said that officially. What does that signify?
Well, of course, behind the scenes, the Pope has really tried in some way to open a line of dialogue with the Orthodox leadership in Moscow, but that failed miserably. So at the moment, he's using the Knights of Malta, that have a long-standing tradition in Russia, for a direct line of communication with Putin. He really relies a lot on the Russians also for his own interest, but I'm talking about interest, I'm talking about tourism in Italy, in religious places, is mainly Russian. So he's losing a lot of money, but He is also interested, of course, in siding with China, which, of course, behind the scenes also sides with Russia. So while he, of course, in front of the general public had to agree to sustain Ukraine, and he did it quite blatantly by showing even the flag of the ground forces of Ukraine, so pretty much in line with NATO, behind the scenes things are different. There is actually a Pope that is part of an order, the Jesuits, that also have a very much a long story with Russia. When the Jesuits were persecuted by the Vatican at one point, it seems strange, now we have a Jesuit Pope, they took refuge in Russia, and was actually Catherine the Great that gave them refuge. So he has definitely his time behind the scenes to maintain this line of communication, and the Knights of Malta also have undergone in the last few weeks a internal coup, because the Pope nominated John T. Dunlap, a member of the Sovereign Council and lieutenant now of the Grand Master, because there is no Grand Master at the moment in the Knights of Malta. And as you know, for the last few years, the Jesuits, who are traditionally controlling of everything, have tried also to take control of the Sovereign Order of the Knights of Malta. When I say sovereign, it's very important to underline sovereign, because they have their own sovereignty, which is separate from the Vatican, and even their own state, even if it's a micro-state. You remember when we were in Rome, at one point I brought you inside the headquarters of the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre. That itself is also another micro-state. So these are states that are separate from the Italian jurisdiction and belong to these important knighthoods. Now, the Sovereign Order of Malta has a former royal, who is still a prince.
Stay there, Leo Zagami. Explain what this means geopolitically. This is big to the whole future of the world, and people aren't talking about it. Leo Zagami is our guest. We'll be right back. Stay with us. So there are big shakeups around the world happening right now, but what does it mean that this globalist pope is reportedly getting ready to step down? Leo Zagami, I can ask a lot of questions, but front and center, you were on a few years ago. You predicted the whole globalist agenda. Those videos have since gone viral. What are you predicting now is about to happen? How is the Great Reset going? Are they planning new pandemics, as Biden says? What do you think is coming next? And just cover the waterfront, anything you want to cover. Instead of my questions, give us the data dump, my friend.
Okay, Alex. Well, first of all, as you know, this crisis will create a massive migration from Africa, for example, because of the grains and flowers that are no longer coming from Ukraine. And for that reason, of course, the papacy will be centered, it will be focused on Africa with an African pope. That's it's almost like they are preparing this whole thing. And at the same time, we have, of course, the escalation in the last couple of days regarding Kaliningrad. Kaliningrad is a small enclave that used to be under the control long time ago of the Teutonic Knights, is on the Baltic Sea. It's Russia, but is surrounded by NATO countries, by Lithuania, by Poland, and now they have stopped the import of goods from Russia by train. That is basically a violation for Russia of all treaties, and it also forces Russia to intervene. Now, the spokesperson for the foreign ministry of Russia has just said that they will intervene basically militarily. That is of an enormous gravity, and I don't really know why most of the media today in America are not talking about it.